All right, so we're live. Welcome to the MTV, the Advanced MTV Core Training webinar that I'm doing. This is the first one. I hope will be, a bunch of these here coming up. So I see we've got a couple people registered or online who are joining me live now. Sorry, trouble getting the words out of my mouth. But anyway, so you see a little chat thing over on the side. If you have any questions or anything like that, just throw them in there, any questions or comments, and I'll get to them as I'm going along. So that's kind of one of the cool things about this is I get to interact with you guys as I'm doing it. So anyway, so basically what I'm going to do is do a short little PowerPoint presentation, just kind of going over what is core training and kind of some of my thoughts on what we're looking at when we're talking about advanced core training techniques and stuff like that. And then I'm going to share a few of my favorite exercises to address some of the common issues that mountain bikers have in their core training gaps. Because remember, a good training program is all about addressing your gaps. And so even though we compete with our strengths, those gaps are ultimately what's going to end up holding us back. And so we got to make sure that we're addressing those gaps. And so any good core training program needs to be looking at what are the gaps that we have as mountain bikers, and then how do we address those things with exercises and a good training program. So I'm going to go ahead and get this going. I'm new to this stuff, so if there's some snafus with the technology side of stuff, I apologize ahead of time. But I'm going to get the PowerPoint pulled up and then go over a couple points with this. So let's see here, that, and hopefully this is what I want. And boom, here we go. All right. So first off, what is core training? Now, I'll be the first to admit, actually, I don't like the term core training because it's become one of these catch-all terms that means, you know, what does it really mean? So that's kind of the first thing that I wanted to talk about is what is core training? So what does the core do? And the core is the platform for movement. And, you know, one of the best descriptions, it might be a little morbid, but if you chop off your head, legs, and arms, you're left with what we would call the core. And so right off the bat, you should be noticing what this is a little more inclusive than what a lot of people necessarily consider when they're thinking about core training. We're usually thinking about just the midsection. And so, let's see here. Here we go. They're out of, a little out of order. I have to go back to that one here. So the upper back and postural muscles are often overlooked when it comes to core training. And so you'll see this when people have a rounded back during planks or other core training exercises. And what they're doing is they're really focusing on that midsection. You know, by now most people know it's not just the six pack and the abs, but we've got the lower back, and some people are even kind of, you know, tuned into the obliques and stuff like that. But if you've got that midsection looking great, but your upper back position is bad, then we're not really getting what we want. We don't want to be overlooking these postural muscles in the upper back, because otherwise we're not really training the core. We're just training some of the muscles in the core, and we're just letting other muscles do whatever they want, which isn't really the point of it. So backing up here just a second, another thing to keep in mind, this also goes along with that upper back strength idea, is that your grip is a window to your core. And this is a quote from Gray Cook, who's one of the guys that came up with the functional movement screen. And grip strength and endurance is directly related to your core strength and endurance. And so there's a cool little test that you can do to see. There's this a principle called irradiation, and basically you can recruit other muscles to help improve the strength of another muscle. So if you're listening to this, you can make a fist and make a fist. And I want you to get it as tight as you can. Get that fist, you know, where you're like, man, I can't make this fist any tighter. And then go ahead and relax and shake your hand out. And then make that fist again. But now I want you to get your forearm muscles tight and get that tight and see what happens. You know, hold that. And then you relax, shake your hand out for a second. And now you're going to do the same thing. You're going to get your grip. You're going to get your forearm muscles and then your bicep nice and strong. And then, you know, you keep doing this and you add in the shoulder and the lats and finally all the way into the core. And you'll notice that each time you connect another muscle into that, you know, into the link there, into the chain, you're able to get a little bit more squeeze out of your core. and are a little bit more squeezed out of your grip. And so one, it just kind of shows how you can, you know, improve the strength in all of your muscles by learning how to use your whole body as a unit. But also it shows that your grip is connected to your core. You know, when you get that core strong finally, and everything from the core all the way out to the grip is strong, then your grip is the strongest that it can be. And so grip strength endurance is one of those real important things. If you didn't catch it, I did an article on my blog and also appeared on Pink Bike a few months ago on a study that they did looking at downhill performance. But honestly, every trail I've ridden has been at least 50% downhill. I mean, you got to, you know, unless you're shuttling or doing something. But, you know, if you end up back at your car, half of the trail was downhill. So downhill is an important part of it. But anyways, point is, they were looking at one of the important factors they found was that grip strength endurance was one of the things that directly related to performance. And the better a rider's grip strength endurance was, the better they performed. And it was funny, one of the things that didn't pan out too well was pedaling based endurance. And, you know, of course, I take a lot of heat for saying that pedaling based aerobic fitness is probably a little overrated for mountain biking. And then Aaron Gwynn goes out and wins a downhill race after breaking his chain out of the gate a couple weeks later, kind of proving my point, which is, you know, he didn't pedal at all after the gate, but you know, his grip strength endurance and his skills and all those other things that study found were on point. So anyways, getting a little off topic, but I tend to do that from time to time. So core strength, ultimately, when you look at it and you think about it, core strength is gonna lead to an increase in grip strength and grip strength endurance, which is one of those factors that, you know, some studies that study found to be directly related to mountain bike performance. So getting back to the core training, one of the things, just I talked about the midsection, but one of the best way to think about what to do with the midsection is to brace the midsection. You know, like you're going to take a punch to the gut. You don't want to suck in your abs. There's still, it's not nearly as prevalent as it was, but for a while, the advice to suck your belly button into your spine and, you know, be able to, get your belly thin, like things like that were coached. And I'll be honest, I coached it myself because at a time it sounded like something that you needed to do. But ultimately, even though that might help kind of get somebody who's got a really distended belly in, ultimately what you don't want to be doing is really sucking the abs in and trying to train yourself to be strong like that. If you think about it, you're not going to be able to squat or deadlift a whole bunch of weight with your abs in that position. Once you get under the weight, your abs are automatically going to brace and create this internal weight belt that you're looking for. And so you don't want to suck your abs in. You want to get tight. Now, I coach like at the top, you know, to get tall and thin, you know, but that tall and thin isn't, you know, like sucking your abs in thin. It's just a matter of trying to not lean back at the top of deadlifts and squats and stuff like that. So make sure you're bracing your midsection. These are just, you know, good principles for overall core training. So here's the thing. Ultimately, the job of the core is not to do planks and to do core training exercises. That's not what we're looking for. What we're looking for is for the core to connect the upper and lower body together. That's what its main job is. We move in everyday life, we move on the bike. And so this creation of movement and how the core helps connect the upper body and lower body during the creation of this movement is ultimately what we're after. And so the core can do this by either resisting movement. So if you think about like a deadlift, you know, you're holding the bar with your hand. So your upper body is actually holding the weight, but your lower body is creating the force and generating the force that's being used to lift the weight off the ground. So that force has to go, you know, into the hands, into the bar somehow. And so that force goes from the legs through the core into the upper body. And so this is one of the reasons why core training, quote unquote, is important, because if that core is weak, then you're going to not have as much force transferred as efficiently, and you're not going to be as strong. And so so you're either resisting that movement, or the core can help by generating some of the movement. We're still connecting the upper and lower body, but if you think about it, like when you're throwing, you know, the core moves some, there is some rotation and some movement in the core, and so it is being used to help generate some of that movement. So we need to be able to use the core to do both. So it's not necessarily just a stiff, resistive core that we're looking for. We also need one that can can move when it needs to help generate momentum and generate movement and stuff like that. So just something to think about there. All right, take a quick drink there. So another thing to keep in mind, core strength. Core strength is position and movement specific. Now, the first thing I need to point out is this does not mean that everything has to look like riding your bike. That's not the point of this statement. It's simply that you have to think about the positions and the movements that you need on your bike. You need to think about the gaps that you have, more importantly, and then think about ways to address those things. So, for example, again, like planks are great, but planks are, they're not necessarily as position and movement specific as some other exercises are. But like I said, a couple of the exercises I'll show you here in a second, don't necessarily look a whole lot like riding your bike, but the movements and the positions and stuff that you're having to go through have a direct transfer over to things that you're doing on your bike. And so, again, it's just the idea that the core training stuff that's necessarily going to work for one group of athletes may not work as effectively for another group of athletes, and the same thing from individual to individual. But, overall, like I said, I'm going to share what I've found most mountain bikers where their gaps are and some of the exercises that I like to use to address those things. So core strength is also subject to mobility and movement gaps. And this is an important one as well, because, you can have the strongest core in the world during isolation exercises, like I said, like during planks, during bird dogs, during, these fancy, Swiss ball, stability ball exercises and stuff like that. But if you have mobility and movement gaps, that core strength is going to, movement comes first. If you tell your body to move and get into a position, it's going to figure out a way to do that, even if that means compromising your core strength and position in order to do that. And so a couple really good examples of that are one, rounding the back at the bottom of a squat. And this is a really common problem. You'll see people that have really great mechanics and their squat looks awesome from, the mid chest down, but they round their shoulders, are hunched up. And they're doing that because they don't have the mobility and haven't quite, worked on training themselves not to do that. But there's some mobility deficits more than likely, because when you round the shoulders and you create slack in one area, then you create some extra slack in another area that might allow you to come down deeper into your squat than if you keep your upper back in a better position. You're not able to come down as deep, and that's just, highlighting a mobility gap that you have. Another one is bending at the lower back instead of hinging at the hips. This is just a movement gap. This is just a movement dysfunction. It's a bad movement pattern. It's something that most people can usually fix with a little bit of thought and training, but a lot of people don't understand the difference between hinging at the hips and bending over at the lower back. And so again, you can do, I'm not picking on planks because I do planks. I think that planks and side planks and bird dogs and all of these exercises, I hate to use the word basic because it sounds like they're not as effective or as good. Everything's relative to where you're at and kind of what you need at the time. But, if you're doing these exercises and you're not doing stuff that focus on teaching you how to hinge at the hips and not the lower back, and so every time you go to bend over, either on the bike or in real life, you end up bending over at the lower back. Again, it doesn't matter how strong your core is in these quote unquote core training exercises. If as soon as you go to move, that position has to compromise to make up for these mobility and movement gaps. And so that's why core strength, is a little bit like, so one of the reasons I kind of don't like the term core strength and core training, because at the end of the day, ultimately, good strength training is core training. If you have a good strength training program, then what you're doing is, all movements in the gym, all movements in your strength training program should be focused on creating that proper connection of the upper and lower body through the core. And since that's the core's primary function, then that is good core training. So again, now people take this stuff to the extreme, and I've been guilty of it myself, and saying like, well, then you just got to do your deadlifts and your presses and your squats and you're fine. You don't need to do anything else specifically. And I don't necessarily agree with that. We don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. What we don't need is core training programs where we have people who are, you know, spending 20, 30, 40 minutes just doing these core isolation exercises that aren't actually working on the movement patterns and how that core needs to be used to connect the upper body and the lower body. So, you know, what we want to do is figure out where your gaps are. And again, going back to that idea of any good training program, its ultimate goal is to fill in your gaps. And so a good core training program is basically going to do that same thing. So you have some gaps, you know, pick an exercise or two to focus on those weak links and gaps. But ultimately, you know, this idea of a core training program is a little bit false because there is no such thing as a core training program and then a strength training program. Like, these things should not be separate. They should be the same thing. And focusing ultimately on that connection of the upper and lower body through the core while you're moving. So advanced MTB core training basically equals exercises that challenge this connection, that connection of the upper and lower body, in ways that transfer to specific skills on the trail. And so again, just kind of going back to what I was saying is, you know, where do you find your movement gaps are on the trail? And then, you know, you have your basic stuff. Like, so for example, like exercises like a single leg deadlift, you know, is that a core training exercise or is that a strength training exercise? I mean, I can make an argument for both depending upon how you wanted to look at it. And so, you know, deadlifts and squats and those things, they are core training. And so you should be training those primary basic primal movement patterns with your strength training program. But then there's kind of some specialized things here and there that show up as gaps based on our sport. And so that's kind of what I want to talk about, some of those things. So the top three core strength gaps that I've found for mountain bikers. One is the postural muscles. And again, this is a huge one. The rounded upper back posture, it not only looks bad, it is functionally bad. You literally cannot breathe as efficiently and as effectively when your shoulders are rounded forward and you have a caved in upper chest or a caved in chest. And so this is one of the things, again, it's like we have so many people out there focused on quote unquote cardio training. Well, what is cardio training? Like, cardio is training your cardiovascular system. Well, your lungs are a huge part of that. And yet most of us think, one, nothing of training breathing. You know, talk about core training, like breathing is the essence of core training. I mean, I talk about that connection between your upper body and lower body, but honestly, driving breathing is the primary function of your core. And so, you know, if it stops doing that, then everything else doesn't matter. And so one, being able to breathe efficiently and everything helps, but two, knowing how your posture affects your breathing and how those changes affect your ability to, you know, use your cardiovascular system efficiently is important. And so again, this is why just focusing on cardio without also working on the mobility and the strength and the things that are going to help you maintain the postural muscles. And because again, it's hard, you're in that position. It's one of these things, like sport is not about health. Like, you have to take yourself down a pretty narrow niched road to be good at a sport. And so, but at the expense of that are other things. And so that, again, it's this filling in the gaps. And that's why postural muscles start to become a gap for most mountain bikers, is because they are in these positions all day long. You know, both just our society has us sitting all the time, and we're sitting on our bikes and stuff. So we're in this position all the time. And so we need to do things that are going to help strengthen those postural muscles to help offset those things instead of just giving into it. So, postural muscles are a big one that'll really help. So, I need to get another drink here real quick, and we'll move on to the second one. So the second one is this lateral hip hinge, or the corkscrew. And this one is essential for cornering on your bike. And this idea of being able to hinge your hips laterally is extremely important. And so there was an old school strength training exercise called the bent press. And the bent press basically had you corkscrewing underneath a weight and then standing back up with the weight. And at its essence, the kettlebell windmill, which is the exercise that I'll talk about here in a second that connects with this, is simply teaching you how to corkscrew under a weight, which means keeping your shoulders over your base of support while laterally hinging your hips out and around. And that's what we need to do when we corner, because we have to change our balance points. You have to change your shoulders, you know, and your hips and stuff, and that we need to lean our bodies basically. But the problem is if you lean your shoulders inside, you crash. But if you learn how to corkscrew your hips out, then you don't crash. So it's the same basic idea of needing to turn and twist and lean your body to help change your balance points to drive you through a corner. But it's just learning how to do it properly. And so again, this is one of those core strength gaps, that lateral hip hinge and the corkscrew. And then finally, shoulder stability. And this ties into the postural muscles, really. And just that one of the points that I made earlier about how the upper back is really one of the gaps, the big things that we miss when we think about core training. And honestly, we miss when we think about strength training. Like, you know, the idea of labeling something a lower body exercise in itself has problems, because when I tell you, okay, you're going to do a squat or a deadlift, and you're thinking, okay, this is a lower body exercise, and you're focused exclusively on your legs, then you're forgetting about how that upper back and shoulder position and stuff look. And so you see this in a lot of different areas. It's not just core training, but this idea of how the upper back is so important for tying everything together in, both with your core training and strength training. So that shoulder stability is something that is really important that we need on the trail, and something that a lot of mountain bikers just don't have. And so a couple of things to help us with that. So last slide here. So the top three core strength exercises to fill those gaps. And again, I hope that you guys weren't hoping for some sort of crazy, fancy looking core training exercise. I mean, if you've never seen the Turkish get up, it'll look fancy until you kind of understand how basic it really is. But again, the idea is not about being fancy. It's about understanding how to fill in the gaps that you have and how to do that efficiently and effectively, and then leaving you enough time and energy to get out and do what we love to do, which is ride our bikes. And so number one for the postural muscles, I really like the farmer's walk and the loaded carries family. That's just a really great one that also really helps with your breathing, your ability to breathe under load and under pressure and maintain your posture. There's some obvious grip strength benefits to it as well. And so there's just a lot of great things that you can get from farmer's walks and loaded carries. The windmill, it's usually done with a kettlebell, but you can do it with a dumbbell or a barbell. It's the windmill. And you can also do just a stick windmill, which is a kind of a stretch / mobility exercise I'll show you that you can do if you're not ready to do the loaded one. And then finally, the Turkish getup, which if you've been following me for any amount of time, then you're probably sick of hearing about the Turkish getup, but too bad, because it's just such a great exercise for us both on and off the trail, and just hits a lot of different stuff. But like I said, one of the things that I really like about the Turkish getup is how awesome it is for shoulder stability, both the arm holding the weight and the arm on the bottom having to stabilize and hold the weight. Both of those are just great things. And so, like I said, I really like it for its shoulder stabilization properties more than just necessarily its core strength stuff. But you get great core strength, you get great, mobility stuff and all sorts of great things there. So it's just a great exercise all the way around. All right, here we go. So I'm going to make a switch here and go back to live mode. So again, hopefully this works here. All right, so it should be back to live mode. All right, perfect. So, looks good. All right. So what I'm going to do now, if you have any questions at any point during this, feel free to type them in the chat room thing there. And I'm going to show you guys these exercises, just go over a couple of coaching cues and stuff with you and go from there. So here we go. All right. Let me see. The first one that we're going to do is the Swiss ball. So what happens when you get a ball that's not round and you roll it off and it just starts going crazy. All right, farmer's walks. First one we're going to start with. So for the farmer's walks, you're going to need two relatively heavy kettlebells or dumbbells. Either one is fine. They make equipment for farmer's walks if you work out like a strongman gym or something. But it's a really simple exercise really at the heart of it. It's good because it's hard to do it wrong. If you do it wrong, you're not going to be able to do it for very long. So it forces you to do it right. It's a self-correcting exercise is the idea. So you're going to grab your couple, grab your weights, get set. Now the first thing, like I said, the postural muscles are the main thing that we want to focus on. It's the first thing I tell people to worry about. You know, don't worry about your grip. Don't worry about anything else. You just want to make sure you have your shoulders in a good, strong position. So we want to think about tucking our shoulder blades into our back pockets and keeping them tucked into our back pockets. Another good cue is to keep our shoulders wide, collarbones wide. So what we don't want to do is exaggerate it and do this. This isn't good either. You just want a good neutral shoulder position, which is shoulders tucked in the back pockets and shoulders and collarbones wide like that. And so this is your main focus. You have to maintain this shoulder position to keep going. If you lose this as you're doing your walk, so to do a farmer's walk, I just like to find a spot and do a figure eight. That way I don't have to worry about doing, you know, right circle one time and left circle another time. Just figure eight. There you go. So again, but if at any point I get to where my shoulders, you know, start to round forward and I can't keep them, I can't get them back, even if I can keep going with my grip, it doesn't matter. You need to drop the weight. Your postural muscles are done. We've blown past the weak link in the whole system. And even though the grip can keep going, we don't want to keep pushing past that. Now what will happen is eventually those postural muscles will get stronger and then your grip will become the weak link. But until that point, you just want to focus on that. Your breathing is also another good thing. So again, I know this isn't a breathing seminar or webinar necessarily, but you know, good breathing, good diaphragmatic breathing. So you want to be breathing into the belly, not into the chest. So you know, this is no good if we want to be breathing into the belly and maintaining good diaphragmatic breathing while you're doing this. So again, just focusing on your breathing and your posture while you're doing this, because it's a pretty simple exercise. Now, what I like to do with this is I like to shoot for 100 steps. For me, like that's the, you know, you can go as few as 20 if you're really trying to work strength. But for me, I like to find a weight that I can get around 80 steps with and then work my way up to where I can do 100. And when that's comfortable, you know, drop back down or you know, increase the weight and drop back down and go back up. So again, you know, there's time and places for a viewer. But, you know, most of the time, that's what I'm looking for is that longer amount of steps with it. So along with your regular farmer's walk, you can also do a single arm farmer's walk. So again, same thing though, we have to watch that posture. So what we don't want to do is lean into it. This will be the tendency is to kind of lean over. So if you feel that the weight resting against your leg, you know, then you know the odds are you're not in a good position. If you have your shoulder tucked down and back in a good position, you have a little kind of shelf with your lat flared out right here, that'll keep your arm out away from your body. So again, if it's, you know, rubbing against your body too much, then you probably lost what you're looking for. And you need to put it down and either switch sides or move on to the next exercise. So along with the farmer's walk, there's a whole bunch of loaded carries you can do. You can be doing rack walks where you get it up into your rack position. You can do overhead walks where you're holding it overhead. You can do combinations of them. So doing a really good one is holding one in the rack position and then holding one in the farmer's walk position. And again, you can use different size kettlebells with that. So, you know, getting a heavy one here and, you know, not quite this heavy in the rack. you know, kind of feels like wrestling a boa constrictor. So it's a pretty interesting sensation there. But you can get pretty creative with the loaded carry. So when you think about, you know, single arm, double arm, different combinations, you know, farmer's rack, overhead, you know, it'll be a long time before you start to get too bored with just how to combine those basic things there. So there you go. So there's the farmer's walks. If anybody has any questions on those, pop them up. Let's see here. I've got a question that's popped up. Let me get a drink here. Let's see. So the question is from Douglas, and basically sounds like he's got about an inch and a quarter hip differential in height, and wondering if he needs to compensate or concentrate on any particular exercises to account for these differences. So I guess like the main thing is, are these like a structural thing? Like, is it the, you know, a broken leg or born this way? Or is it just like this is the structure? Or is this just from like over the years, the way that your body is kind of shaped and changed has resulted in this difference? I'm gonna guess it's probably maybe a combination of both, but an inch and a quarter is probably, you know, that's a significant one. But I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, I mean, not really. I mean, pain is your guide. So that's ultimately it. If something's causing you pain, or, you know, you also need to listen to your intuition. I do think that that's something that gets drilled out of us a little bit. But if something hurts or it doesn't feel right, then it probably isn't right for you. And so there's a lot of different ways to, you know, go about this. So, for example, for you, I would probably focus a lot more on single leg exercises than double leg exercises. Like, you know, unless you're, you know, have a shoe or something that can help compensate for that difference, then, you know, training single leg is going to help get around that. So that'd be something I would suggest, is focusing more on that than the double leg stuff. You know, and again, you know, that might come down to kettlebell swings, which is something that I really, an exercise I really love. You know, see how that's affecting, how it's working, how you're looking when you're moving. Again, it's another thing. I mean, it just doesn't look right, and it's probably not right. So if you're doing a movement and this difference is, you know, a trained eye from the outside is going, man, it doesn't quite look right. So that's age related. So, yeah, I mean, and he's being treated for it. So, like I said, the main thing is the single leg versus double leg exercises, and just finding alternatives. If you're looking at something that's saying you need to do a double leg exercise and look for the single leg. So even doing, you know, single leg swings, like that's a, you know, an exercise. I don't know if single leg swings really the right term for it, but I've kind of called a couple of things. But it's basically when you come up to the side or come to the top, you come up on your leg, you know, and you can either do, you know, your reps on one leg and then do your other, or you can, so, you know, again, if you're looking at it from the side, it's just, it's a regular swing. The bottom, you can't really tell, you know, it looks the same. You're not really compensating. It's just when you come up that you come over on one side. So just alternative things like that. I mean, you know, as far as core training stuff, I don't think that any of it, you know, the stuff that I'm going over today, again, like farmer's walks, I don't know. I mean, you got to walk, you know? So I don't know. Realistically, that's kind of a question that's better left to someone a little more qualified than me. What I do is, like, once people have been cleared, so, you know, once you know, either know, here's the things that I need to keep in mind, then I can help you make decisions based on that. Or if you're like, I'm clear, and they're like, there's nothing, you know, it's basically just kind of whatever I feel comfortable doing and pain related and can tolerate pain wise. Well, then that's, you know, again, that's kind of a different path necessarily for the advice to go. And so, you know, my ultimate advice would be to ask someone a little more qualified than me, make sure, you know, a sports medicine doctor, somebody say, hey, are there any movements or anything that I need to watch? Or be aware of, or things like that with this kind of differential. And if they're like, nah, you know, that's just whatever, then like I said, then like, you know, just kind of go at it, go for it and see how, go on that pain and kind of how does it feel and look scale. And so anyways, which I had a little bit more specific answer for you with that, but it's kind of a little bit of an open-ended question. And like I said, ultimately, the question is better answered by someone more qualified than me, and then someone like me can help you make decisions based on that, on that there. So anyways, hopefully that helps. So all right, let's move on. So Farmer's Watch was the first one. Next one is the windmill. So I'm going to show you the stick windmill first. And this is what I suggest that everybody starts out, because there is some rotation in that's required from this. And so if you don't have the requisite rotation through the hips and the thoracic spine, then again, I was talking about this earlier, like mobility, your core strength is subject to your mobility. So if you need extra movement, you can't get it from where you need it, it's going to start coaxing it out of here. And so this is one of those movements that you don't want to load until you really know you own the movement, because there is some twisting that could happen through the low back here, which is really bad. We don't want to have that happen. So, all right, stick. But this is, you know, doing the stretch is fun because this isn't loaded. So, all right, you get set. Show you from the side here. You're going to step forward. I got my feet set about hip width apart. I don't want them real narrow. I don't want them wide. I want them like I'm looking at myself from, you know, in front, and my legs are straight up and down. And then I'm going to step 1 foot forward, and that foot is going to be like my, that heel is lined up with the big toe. So right here, I feel pretty close to if I was standing on the pedals of my bike. That's really probably one of the best ways to describe where you're going to be. So with that, here's what we're going to do. We're going to kick our hip over, set our weight on this leg, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to drive this movement. And this is actually a really important thing to help with cornering. If you learn how to drive your hips by dropping your shoulder, your shoulders drive your hips. This is a piece of advice I got from a surf coach, actually my father-in-law. My wife's from Hawaii, and so he's, you know, they're all surfers. And one day we're talking, and he's like, everybody thinks you turn your surfboard with your hips. Like, but you don't. You turn your surfboard with your shoulders. Your shoulders turn your hips, and then that turns your board. And I was like, well, yeah, if you think about it, and like, yeah, that's what you see surfers doing. And so it was one of the things that it was kind of one of these light bulb moments for me, where I went out on the trail and started thinking about trying to turn my shoulders and use my shoulders to turn my hips. And that started helping me a lot. And the reason for that, I realized, is because it taps into this corkscrewing motion that this does. And so what we're going to do is I shift my weight over here. Now I'm going to get this shoulder to point straight down at the ground. I want the outside of my shoulder to point down at the ground. I'm going to get this elbow to wedge inside this knee. So if I do that, I point this shoulder down and I get that elbow there. Everything that I wanted to have happen happens. I don't have to think about this at all. And again, I have to keep my core strong, and this is where the core strength comes in, where if this isn't, you know, strong, then and I just lose this position as I start to come down, right? If I do this, well, this isn't it, you know, I just lost my core position, this isn't staying strong. But if I do this and I keep my core strong, which again is the essence of core training here, then it will push my hips out and around where they need to be. And then I come back up by driving the hips back over the feet, and that is what brings up my shoulders. So coming down, my shoulders drive my hips. Coming back up, my hips drive my shoulders. And so again, using this exercise to start is fun. So if you struggle with this, if you're getting down and you're like this, you feel like you're having to, you know, twist and around, you don't want it to be too ugly. You want it to look real nice and smooth. So just stick with this movement. And you can use it as a stretch, get down there and just breathe and just relax and focus on gaining mobility. You can use it as an exercise where you come down and hold it for a second and then come back up and use it as reps to help groove that the feel of the hips moving and the shoulders connecting and stuff like that. So you can use it in a couple different ways. It's a pretty cool, versatile exercise that way. That goes along with the kettlebell windmill. I got one more question that's popped up here, and I will get to that here in just a second. I just want to show the windmill because it's the exact same thing. You're going to get your weight though. So this time I'm going to get a weight up overhead. I'm going to be a kettlebell or going to be a dumbbell. But from this point, my feet are hip width apart. From this point, everything's the same. I get my feet set in the same position. I'm stepping forward opposite the kettlebell. I shift my hips over, and then I'm going to get this shoulder to point down at the ground, and I'm going to get this to wedge behind that elbow, or my elbow wedge behind the knee, and I'm going to drive back up. So, you know, see that corkscrewing motion I'm talking about? When I, it didn't work, wasn't that very well in my feet that way. All right, so you'll notice how my shoulders stay over my feet. I don't lean forward. So what we don't want to do is something that looks like this. You see how my shoulders are now forward. They've really moved. Ultimately, what I like to do is just corkscrew under the weight so that my shoulders stay in pretty much the same position, they're over the same point, versus leaning forward and having them really move forward like that. So again, on the bike, if I do A, I'm coming in the corner and I do that one I just showed, and I lean my shoulders in, boom, I'm going down. But if I corkscrew, my weight is still out, I'm not leaning in. But I've leaned my body and I've changed my balance points to help drive my cornering. So that's one of the great things about that exercise, but one of the movement gaps. So, all right, perfect. All right, well, that was actually just Douglas saying that was good advice from me for on the single leg stuff. So I'm glad that worked out good. So, all right, so again, if anybody's got any questions on the windmill or anything like that, throw it in there. Last thing on the windmill, I did forget one thing. This is something that I see a lot of people doing, whether you're doing the stick windmill or whether you're doing the weighted windmill. This weight shift you need to stick this weight shift and then start moving. What you don't want to do is do this. Like, that's not the same thing. It's not going to work nearly as effectively as shifting your weight over to this leg. So this leg, I got about 89% of my weight on this leg, and then doing my movement to come down. And when I come back up, I'm gonna be balanced on both legs, so I'm gonna have to shift my weight again. And again, this relates to cornering, because you don't wanna be coming into a corner with your weight neutral. You have to be ready to use your balance points to leave the corner. So you want to, you're coming in a corner, you kind of want to shift your weight a little bit and get that outside foot ready so that you're ready to drive and use the corkscrew and use your inputs into the bike and all that stuff. So it's kind of funny how the setup, I mean, the whole thing really mimics the movements that you need behind cornering. And I can't even tell you, it's like clockwork. I start working with a client, I give them a steady dose of stick windmills. And within a couple months, you know, again, these things usually feel pretty awkward at first, but sticking with it, and then I start getting the comments like, man, my corner's really starting to feel a lot better. And I'll be like, oh, but your windmills are feeling a lot better too. And they're like, yeah, now that you mention it, they are. They're way more smoother, way more comfortable. So I guarantee you, the better you are with those windmills, the smoother you're going to feel with your cornering stuff. All right, so last one, Turkish getup. And again, the Turkish getup, we're looking at some of the shoulder stability things that you get from it. Now, the Turkish getup is great because it's seven exercises in one. It's kind of the cheating answer to that question, if you could only pick one exercise to do for the rest of your life, what would it be? And I'm like, Turkish getup, because it's seven exercises in one. It's a little bit of a cheating exercise. But that's also what makes it so great, because you have to go through the sequence of movements. So what I'm going to do is show you the movement without the weight, because a lot of times, first time people see it, they're like, whoa, I can never do that. But then when I show you, like, no, this is all you're doing, you're just holding a weight over your head. So you need to be a little more focused. It doesn't look nearly as intimidating. So your Turkish get up, half part of it, get these weights out of the way. at the heart of your Turkish getup is just getting up off the ground. It's the most efficient way to go from your back to standing up. So if I was laying on the ground and I needed to get up, you know, I mean, that's not a crazy sequence of movements right there. So, but now we're going to clean it up, add a couple things in. But that's literally all you're doing is learning how to roll over on your side and use levers to get your hips up and get your leg under you so that you can stand up. And so, one, it's just a really good core training exercise. And two, like being able to get up off the ground is a good thing. So, as we age, I know not everybody listening to this is worried about this yet, but some of us like me are you know, approaching 40 very quickly and looking beyond my younger years, and you know, things like being able to get up off the ground and look around, and some of my peers are not nearly as effective. You get them on their back, and all of a sudden they're a little bit like a turtle on its back, you know, flailing, taking a second, like, whoa, what do I do? How do I get up off the ground and get up from here? And that's not good. That's not good. It's not where we want to be. So Turkish getup just keep you moving well, and just keep you a vital skill that you need under your belt, which is how to get up and how to move efficiently and effectively on the ground. So, anyways, all right. So Turkish getup, the exercise itself. First thing that we want to do. Let's see, this way. All right. First thing that we're going to do is, you want to use both hands to get your weight up. So I'm going to roll over to my side, grab the weight, and then roll over here, both hands up, and get it set. The idea being, if I couldn't do it with a 70-pound kettlebell, I don't want to do it with a 20-pound kettlebell. I need to practice the same technique, the same form that I would have to use to get the heaviest kettlebell I can do up with the lightest kettlebell that I use, because that way the form is just a brand. So, good technique to get it up. You're gonna get your arm and your leg out to the side. We want some angles here so my leg's not straight down. And then step one, get up on your elbow. Now, shoulders, right? So this is kind of the name of the game, what we're talking about. When we get here, we want to tuck those shoulder blades into our back pocket. What we don't want is this shoulder hunched up towards the ear. We don't want this shoulder hunched up towards the ear. We want to push down away from the ears, which is what'll happen. If you've got your shoulder blades tucked into your back pocket, think about puffing your chest out. So again, next step, we're going to come up onto our hand. So when I come up onto my hand, I'm going to point my fingers back behind me a little bit so I can get this shoulder into a good strong position. If I don't do that, my shoulder's going to be rounded, no good. So next step, we're going to get our hips up. We're going to pull our knee underneath us. We're going to shift our hips over. Bring ourselves up to this half kneeling position, windshield wiper the legs, and then stand up. So again, whole time I'm keeping this shoulder down away from my ear, shoulder blades tucked in my back pocket, coming down, big step back, windshield wiper the leg, hand comes down to the ground, make sure I got those shoulder blades tucked down to the ground. Now here's the important one. A lot of times when people come down, they'll just let this collapse. Really drive this elbow into the ground and push that ear or your shoulder down away from your ear as you come down. And two hands down, and there you go. So just making sure that you're keeping an eye on that shoulder position during that exercise is very important. So so there you go. So there's your Turkish getup. I've got a bunch of different videos and stuff. Like that demonstration there was, you know, pretty quick. If you want to see a little bit more in-depth and detailed demonstration, I have some more videos on my site at bikejames.com. Just type in Turkish getup and you'll probably get a few dozen entries on it. But there you go. Just kind of a rough overview of it there. The focus on the shoulders. Get up on the elbow, shoulders, good strong position. Get up on the hand, shoulders, good strong position. And at first, they're not going to be. At first, you're going to find when you go to get up on your elbow, your shoulders are going to hunch. They're going to go into a bad position. Fix it. Up on your hand, they're going to move again. Fix it. Keep fixing your shoulders at each step of the way. That should be one of the things. Each position, you should stop. Make sure you're in the right position everywhere before you move on to the next position. And the shoulders need to be one of those main things that you're checking, especially as you're laying back down on the ground. Don't just collapse and let that come down. Really fight that and get strong with that. And that'll help you get a lot more out of that Turkish gut, especially from the upper back position. So, got another question here from Blake, talking about the windmill. How many reps on each side do you usually start out with? And does it hurt to do them every day? So, reps, you know, I like to three to five of those. I don't find that certain exercises, I just don't find lend themselves well to high reps. And the kettlebell windmill is one of those. If I'm using it for mobility exercise, then I'll hold that bottom position longer rather than necessarily do more reps. But another one there, Xavier. Shoe tip was helpful. Yeah, with the Turkish getup, put a shoe on your fist and learn how to do it with a shoe on your fist will help with that shoulder stability as well. So it probably would have been easier to demonstrate than holding the kettlebell there. Sometimes you get halfway through an exercise demo and you realize, like, ah, I picked a little bit heavy kettlebell there. But anyways, so thanks, man. Yeah, the shoe tip. And you can find that one on my blog as well. But sorry, Blake got caught off by the chat room there. So the back to the windmill, 3 to 5 reps. I mean, and just doing more sets. Again, I'm just kind of the from a learning standpoint, when you're doing 10 reps of something, a lot of times you do some of those reps because they stand between you and 10. And so 5 seems for me, at least in my experience with the clients that I use, seems to be that number where you can focus on 5 reps. You can give each rep a good amount of focus. And so if the exercise like the windmill and I'm using it to help to try to groove a movement and train a movement pattern, then I'm going to keep the reps lower like that. And also with strength stuff. And so anyways, so 3 to 5 with that, doing them every day. No, not necessarily wouldn't hurt. You don't want to train them, hard every day, but doing stick windmills, like I do stick windmills almost every day. And I love to throw the windmill into my workouts or just grab a kettlebell. I mean, that's one of the things, like practice helps make perfect in some ways. And so the more times you get the chance to practice. So like for me, I've got these kettlebells sitting here. My office is sitting back behind me here. So when I walk through here, sometimes I'll just grab a kettlebell and I'll just rip off a set of 5 windmills. And I'm not going heavy. I'm just grabbing like a 12 or 16 kilo. It's not nothing challenging, but I'm just getting more practice with the movement. So, doing it every day is definitely something that I would recommend. That the windmill, the stick windmill and the windmill is one I would recommend doing every day. But I would make sure you're not like trying to go crazy, because the windmill from a strength training standpoint, like, man, you go heavy with those and you'll feel muscles that you really didn't know that you had. I mean, I've been caught off guard more than once the day after getting a little heavy with my windmills and going like, God, dude, what is good? Oh, windmills, that's right. So, like anything else, everything in moderation, including moderation, right? So cool. So hopefully that answers your question. I would say like 3 to 5 days of the strength training windmill and the other days filling in with the stick windmill. If you're looking to try to do a weekly one and you're at the point you can use the weighted windmill, otherwise just hit the stick windmill every day until you can do it. And so there you go. All right, so that does it for the core training webinar. If anybody else has any more questions, you want to get them in real quick, because that's all I had for you guys. So just to sum it up, core training is important, but it's just an understanding of what core training is supposed to be. And at the heart of it, good core training is just good strength training and really training you how to connect the upper and lower body in the movements and the positions that we need on the trail. And so, that's why for me, I'm looking at, for example, the farmer's walk. It's really good for standing pedaling. Like, and a lot of people have problems when they stand up, they're just so locked in this position that they literally can't get into an optimal standing pedaling position. And so standing pedaling is always going to feel hard if you can't, get those postural muscles engaged and get those shoulder blades pulled down and back and change your change your posture and stuff. So anyway, just to kind of understand how those things fill in the gaps, and then you know, that's what core training needs to be. Is kind of, what are these specific movement gaps? What can I do to kind of help fill that in? And so there you go. So Pedro had a quick question on shoulder exercise. The Turkish get up, like I said, the Turkish get up is the best shoulder exercise. The windmill is also awesome, really good for the shoulder. So remember, like, movement is not the only way, or even necessarily the most important way to train an area of the body. And so stability, you want to make sure that you build stability first. And so that's why the Turkish get up and the windmill are so good, because you're taking that shoulder to so many different positions and having to stabilize in those different positions. And so, you know, when you can do that, then doing shoulder presses and other, like, quote unquote shoulder exercises are much, much easier. So both of those will really help with that, and the farmer's walk. I mean, honestly, all three of those are just awesome shoulder exercises, because a lot of shoulder issues and postural muscle issues at the heart of it. So anyways, all right, so that does it, guys. So, man, this was fun. I really appreciate everybody that joined me live. And remember, if you guys haven't done it yet, you know, visit me at bikejames.com, and I got a bunch of free resources, you know, free 30-day workout you can sign up for and check out, and just kind of see how I incorporate this stuff. But again, this is real fun. We'll definitely have to do more of them in the future. So until next time, it's been James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems, and we'll talk to you in our next webinar, guys.